Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It is always an honor and a privilege to be here, and particularly in view of the fact that yesterday the hearing started on the Hill with Ambassador Crocker from Iraq and General Petraeus from Iraq giving their report on the state of the situation in Iraq. And lo and behold, I'm sitting there and watching this and watching Senator Carl Levin and saying to myself, did I hear that right, what he just said? Because he must be listening to Michael Savage. I mean, it's as though he lifted it word for word from what Savage has been saying for weeks, if not months. And that is about the fact that maybe the Iraqis, who are at the receiving end of this tremendous bonanza of petrodollars flowing into their country, maybe they should be paying for their own reconstruction instead of you and me paying for their reconstruction of Iraq. Play cut three.
We need to put continuous and increasing pressure on the Iraqis to settle their political differences, to pay for their own reconstruction with their oil windfalls, and to take the lead in conducting military operations.
Now, how many times have you heard that? Those of you who are members of the Savage Nation, how often have you heard Michael Savage say that? True genius. I think they are now actually listening to him. If only the Republicans would also listen to him and follow some of his advice. But as I was watching these hearings, and there's some more of them, that there are House congressional hearings today with Crocker and Petraeus there, I kept thinking to myself, I wonder how the Democrats particularly would have acted in this hearing if it was their war. In other words, a Democratic president had started. Let's just, for the sake of argument, say that Bill Clinton had started this war in Iraq. I wonder how they would have been reacting at that time. And it just bothers me to no end that how political this whole process has become when we're at war. And then Obama now saying that we need a diplomatic surge. And again, as Michael Savage has pointed out, it looks like Obama would be the Neville Chamberlain of our time. I mean, what's the talk about with Iran? I mean, how do you talk to someone who wants to eliminate Israel from the face of the earth, who thinks that we as a society are totally corrupt morally, and we don't see eye to eye on anything? And they're out there busy trying to make an A-bomb. Try to tell us they need it for peaceful purposes when they are, what, the second or third largest oil reserves in the world over there? And so as I watch this presidential campaign unfold in front of us, I'm just struck by this thought that my choice come November, if I am within the constructs of a two-party system, my choices come this November will be between the extreme left, the moderate left, and the right left. Now, isn't that what it's really come down to? And I thought, well, Obama, obviously, if you know anything in terms of his political leanings, his voting record, what he's written, what he said in speeches, his background, is the extreme left candidate. And the moderate left candidate, the one that appears to be more pragmatic, would be Hillary Clinton. And then the right left candidate would be McCain, John McCain. But then I thought to myself, how did we get here as conservatives? How did we get here to this point where we have a John McCain holding the banner of the Republican Party? Well, quite frankly, because the conservatives have conceded the Republican Party to those individuals that simply are out in a quest for power. And they believe that getting to power means that all you have to do is restructure your message, give the people what they want. I mean, they look at politics sort of like selling a brand of toothpaste. You do whatever you have to do to get your toothpaste sold. In this case, they're talking about selling themselves as the Republicans to get elected. And so there is no political philosophy that underlies the majority of the folks running for the Republican Party. Oh, they gave you lip service. But when's the last time that they've actually kind of walked their talk? And how do you get there? You get there by constantly making these concessions. And I'm struck by the difference of our politicians today and those politicians that existed at the founding of this nation back in 1776. Those of you who may have been watching this great series that HBO is putting on of John Adams, based on David McCullough, the historian's book called John Adams, which I've read. If you haven't read it, read it. It's a great book. He also wrote 1776. And then you can see the strength of the people that founded this country. Not just people like John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and people of that time, but just the ordinary folks that fought in the Revolution. In 1776, McCullough points out, and this is based on the writings, the letters, the diaries of just average folks that went to fight the war. In the wintertime, walking with bare feet when it's below freezing because they had no shoes. I mean, the mettle of these people, the ability of these people to be married to a concept and to carry it through. What a fine stock we come from. Which makes it all the more depressing when you take a look at some of the people we have now as politicians. But getting back to my point, if people like John Adams were prepared to make the compromises that a number of people at that time were encouraging, which was to compromise with the British throne, to appease, to sit down and talk, to have surge diplomacy, this country wouldn't exist the way we know it today. It would exist like a socialist Canada to the north, or a socialist United Kingdom, or all the various socialist countries that have existed in Europe. That's the bottom line to all of this. And so why is it today that we sit down and say, well, yeah, I got to hold my nose and vote for the lesser of two evils? Because I think in that compromise, when you make that compromise, you allow this movement to the left to continue to continue. And for the past three, four decades, that's what's been happening. I take a look at the presidencies during my lifetime, Nixon, the late Senator Patrick Moynihan, shortly before his death, said that Nixon was the last liberal president at that time. I look at the Bushes, Senior, Junior, both of them extremely far to the left of center. The only one that I can think of, or Ford was to the left of center as well. The only one I can think of that actually had a conservative agenda and attempted to carry it out was Ronald Reagan. So other than that, we may move quickly to the left or we may move in incremental steps to the left. But we continue to move to the left. And that must be because we're voting for the lesser of two evils again and again and again. Isn't that right? And think about this. If at the founding, our founders, people like John Adams or Thomas Jefferson, had gone along with this idea of the lesser of two evils, let's embrace, let's talk, let's compromise, this country wouldn't exist the way we know it today. And so my question to you would be, these constant compromise in terms of candidates, are they really in our best interest in the long term? Do they in any way, shape, or form stop this movement to the left, whether it is in slow incremental steps or goes a little faster, depending on what we have in Congress, the makeup of Congress, and who's in the White House. But nevertheless, It's just moving to the left further and further and further and further. I'll now open up the phone lines for your comments. My number here is 1-800-449-TALK, 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. This is Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
So the question this hour on the Savage Nation is, why do we go for the lesser of two evils? Why do we allow the lesser of two evils to represent us? And where are the people that are holding their politicians accountable? And that's a question that I've got. Because you keep hearing again and again, I just can't stand the other. Can you imagine? Now, there may be faults with this particular candidate, but my God, if we were to vote for the other candidate, if he got into power or she got into power, my God, it would be so much worse. My number is 1-800-449-8255. It is Weisbach in for Michael Savage on his Savage Nation. First up, we have Dave listening to us in Chicago. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for a few of the most refreshing minutes of radio I've heard in a long time. I turned on partway through that opening, and I was listening to where you were talking about not appeasing, not compromising, and how you don't give in. And I was fully expecting it to go to Iraq and terrorism and just started thinking to myself, oh, God, not again. Why don't we talk about the greatest stretch of the country and the federal government and not giving in? And heck, if you didn't take it there, it was so refreshing. Now, what's the answer?
Yeah.
Where do we go? How do we put an emphasis on getting somebody we can trust? I would rather have an honest Ralph Nader, who I absolutely don't support or agree with, than any of the three that they're talking about now, because at least he's honest. I know what he'll do, even where I don't agree with him. But, I mean, I certainly don't want a Nader. I want a conservative. But where is that person, and how do we
get I understand, and I thank you very much, Dave. And I would like to have some honesty as well. Now, you heard the big kerfuffle about Obama, who's talking against the North American Free Trade Agreement, apparently having told as either the Canadian Prime Minister or one of his ministers up there privately or one of Obama's spokespersons that, don't worry, this is just political talk on the part of Obama. It has been denied, I believe. I don't know what the status of that is. But look, that happens all the time. It happens all the time. And when I used to rail about politics with my mentor, who was, I guess, about now deceased, but ran a number of public companies, was a philosopher businessman and very honest, who quit because it got to be just no fun running big companies because of all the, he was in the mining business, because of all the government involvement. But I used to sit there idealistically and say to him that, you know, once you get to political power, you could change all this stuff that was going on. And he'd say, you know, Peter, it's not going to happen from politicians. It's going to happen from the people, he says, because when the followers lead, the leaders follow. Or that he would say that the politicians mirror the society and that they will merely reflect what the population wants. And so if there are enough of us saying, you know, we're not prepared to make these kind of compromises anymore. And I've heard it again and again. Oh, we are a two-party system. Just take a look at Europe. Look at Europe. They've got a gazillion parties. Nobody has power. Governments are falling all the time. Well, look, we're not in the European parliamentary system. We have our unique Republican system here in the United States. That will not happen. But I think we have to make a stand. If we continue to make these kinds of compromises, we will continue to move further and further from being a constitutional republic and moving further and further to the left, with fewer and fewer individual rights. Because make no mistake about it, what makes this country so great is the concept of sovereignty, individual sovereignty, that the power rests with the people, and the people delegate that power on a short-term basis to their representatives and their senators and their president. That's what makes this so great. And the whole concept of individual rights that are bestowed to us by a creator and therefore cannot be disbanded or taken away by mere mortals, i.e. politicians. And so, of course, we have the power. But I don't think we can continue to reward people who talk a line but walk a totally different line. Mark in Hartford, Connecticut, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. The comment that I had, and I just wanted to hear your response to it, is when you were speaking regarding Carl Levin making the astonishing comment about paying...
Oops, sorry, I guess I lost that call.
And it's not such a revolutionary idea, because I remember in the run-up to the war, you know, part of the whole spiel that was being given by Bush and others in his administration was that was one of the main points that was being made, you know, that you were going to pay for a lot of this for the oil and so forth. And then it just kind of, you know, dropped under the surface somehow, under the radar for a long time.
Well, it's kind of bizarre, though, don't you think, that we're paying, you know. And by the way, this money, as I understand it, is kind of like, it's not really part of the budget. It's kind of off budget. It becomes a supplemental budget, and it isn't really accounted for in a straightforward accounting manner.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like Enron, when they had all that stuff with off-balance sheet items and some of the bigger corporations and the public corporations of the country a few years ago. A number of their top executives ended up going to the slammer for it. Do you remember that? Do you remember the corruption involved in that? I'm talking about, yeah, the corruption. Because you had to be, it had to be aided and abetted by big CPA firms that sanctioned the move for corporations not to put every liability that they had on their balance sheets. So these guys go to the slammer, yet our politicians do it all the time. They kind of cook the books. If it was done in the private sector, we'd be in the slammer for doing stuff like that. All right, we are going to go for a quick break, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion why the American people are compromising with their candidates, and where are the people that are holding their politicians accountable. 1-800-449-8255 is the number to call. Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It's an honor and a privilege to be here, and I thank you for listening today as we discuss why are we compromising constantly with the lesser of two evils. And the reason I ask this is because I kind of just had this epiphany, at least for me. I don't have many in the way of epiphanies, but and this is a small one for most people, but for me it was a big one. And I kind of realized come November, this is the choice I'm going to be faced with when it comes to the presidential elections. A candidate who's the extreme left, a candidate who is the middle left, moderate left, and then the right left, represented by John McCain. It is an absolute absurdity that again and again we make these compromises, and again it is not in our best interest to do so, but yet we do it. Why is it not in our best interest, you might ask? Well, why would it be in our best interest to go in a direction politically that we fundamentally as conservatives don't agree with? Why? Why would we? Why do we do it? And where are the people that hold their politicians accountable? Now, some people might say that the problem is, well, let me take this call first, and then I may tell you what I think the problem is. Ralph, in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Peter, I'm not so sure that the founding fathers had in mind that we would have a system where the most money wins, and that everyone that's there running has to have a law background. I mean, I think that's where, or a beltway guy like McCain is. I think that's where.
Well, is there a law that says they have to be lawyers? I mean, could you run, for instance?
I doubt it. I don't think so.
Is there a law that says you can't unless you're a lawyer?
There's not, but realistically, I
so therefore, there is no law. Therefore, people who are non-lawyers could actually run if they wanted to.
No one would vote for them. That's the
really.
Problem.
Do you think that when people, the majority of people, go into the ballot box, ballot booth or whatever they do or mark their ballot, that they're looking out there and saying, gee, is John Doe or Josephine Smith a lawyer? Because if she's not, I'm not going to vote for them.
Also, a money situation. Obama has raised, but I'll tell you one thing about Obama. He's raised his money from mostly the common folk kind of giving giving relatively small amounts of money, and that's admirable, at least as opposed to Hillary, who's raised millions from other sources.
Okay, so you said the problem is money. I don't think the problem is money. I think the problem is the individual American, most of whom have been dumbed down by a very pathetic and subversive public education system, and people who don't think for themselves. You know, there's a bunch of research about, you know, why do people kind of follow? Research about groupthink. And people like to be amongst a group. They'd like to have their positions validated. Because primarily, I think a lot of us, I mean, lacking the installation of a strong value system that we can live by, a philosophy, individual for to each of us, that we live by, that we're not prepared to. There are certain things we aren't prepared to compromise. Most people these days who have been brought up in situational ethics don't have a strong value system. And so therefore they have a high need to be validated at all times externally. The strength doesn't come from the inside. It comes from the outside. They look to the outside for validation. They have a high need to be liked by other people. They have a high need for their thoughts to be validated. So they become part of groupthink, and they follow a small number of leaders. And by quite frankly, I think that's also the case with the dominant media, the big media, that they look for a few leaders to see how they come down on a particular issue, and that's the particular line that they take on any given issue, that kind of follow. Most people are of the herd mentality. And so most people in our system, unfortunately, don't understand and aren't really able to take that sovereignty that's bestowed to us within our Constitution, because they're not responsible enough in making their decisions. They don't think critically. They haven't been taught to think critically. They think emotionally. Now, most of our political dialogue these days is absolute emotionalism. And I don't think, quite frankly, the conservatives can ever win again in this country unless conservatives / libertarians can somehow bring out their message emotionally to hit those emotional response chords that exist in the majority of Americans these days. All right, Brian in Indianapolis, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Peter.
Yes, sir.
My problem is that the whole entire, we choose a delegate for the presidential candidacy, needs to be revamped. Corporations revamp their leadership structure all the time. We have the most resourced nation in the world.
So what do you want? When you say you want to revamp it, what do you want to revamp?
Okay, I'm in Indiana, and we haven't even had an opportunity to choose a candidate yet. But at the same time,
were you talking about the Republicans?
Either or.
What are you a member of a political party?
Absolutely not. I would not subscribe.
You're not a member of any political party. So therefore, you shouldn't have a say on who represents the political parties, since you're not a member of either one of them.
That is. Exactly. The problem at hand is that I should have a complete, because I'm a citizen.
You shouldn't have any say in terms of who carries the banner of any particular political party unless you are a member of that political party. Now, you should have a say when it comes to the general election, but the primary, that's bizarre. Why would you, if you're not a member of the party? I mean, are you allowed to vote at a shareholders meeting at a public company if you don't hold any shares?
No, but let me continue with my point. My point is that...
No, I can't let you continue with your point because the basis of your point is flawed. I've just pointed that out to you.
There was an independent that were able to go up against the Democrats and the Republicans on the ballot in Indiana, then I could have a say in what presidential candidate goes towards the general election at the end of the year. But it's so watered down by the time it comes to my state that I have absolutely no say and what happens in the...
But I don't understand this. The independents don't have a political party. They're just independent, which means, in our system, they don't belong to any political party. If you're an independent, you shouldn't have the ability to vote in a primary.
be able to...
Because it is up to the political parties to decide. No, I'm not going to run the mulberry bush. And I know that most people somehow think it's a constitutional, inherent, God-given right to vote in primaries. The heck with it. I think each political party should totally fund all of their own primaries if that's what they want. But it's up to them to pick who carries their banner. It has nothing to do with the general population. We get to vote during a general election, ladies and gentlemen. I think it is absolutely bizarre that the taxpayers are picking up the tab for these bloody primaries, for political parties, political entities, to choose who their candidate should be. I don't want to disabuse you of this, but listen, you don't have a God-given right or a constitutional right to vote in the primaries of political parties. You have a right to vote when it comes to the general election. Next up, Vernon, Mobile, Alabama. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Peter, for taking my call. I think, Peter, the biggest issue is that people vote against their own best interest all the time. I haven't been able to figure that out, but people do. And the other thing is that people are ill-informed of the candidates that are running. They take their cues from their neighbor, their co-worker, from their parents, from their brothers, their sisters.
Yes, but why is that?
Because they don't want to do the homework. It's laziness. It's laziness. I mean, if you vamp, if you prop your head...
But it's not laziness. Listen, the political system should be not... Look, first of all, if you take a look at our Constitution, the federal government should not be involved in the myriad of laws and all the aspects of our lives that they have become involved in. They don't really have the constitutional power to do that. Government has become so convoluted. It has become such a business in and of itself that it's difficult for professionals to keep up with all the stuff that's coming out of Washington, D.C., the people who do it for a living, it's difficult to do. So how can the average person or family that's been driven out, both parents have been driven out of the house, well, that is if they want to be able to afford a house, make the mortgage payment and stuff, they got to go out and pay the high taxes. They've got to go out and work, both of them. Whereas at one time, of course, it was possible to just have one breadwinner in the family. And even if you were a blue-collar worker, you could aspire to owning a home, to sending your kids to college. You could do all those things because your tax rate was so much less. But now that government has helped you, both of you have to go out there and work. And even then, it's difficult to get a house. Why? Because governments end up with growth management acts, which constricts the supply of property. And when you constrict the supply of something artificially, of course, it drives the price up. And then, of course, on top of that, you constrict the supply of property that you can build on, and then you layer upon it all kinds of fees for building the houses. And then, of course, the price goes up, 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 up. And pretty soon you have both members out there working, and how could they possibly spend the time to keep up with the myriad of things that are being done in Washington, D.C.? It's an impossibility. And this is where compromise gets you. When is the last time your Republicans have talked about, hey, why are they doing this? Is this constitutional? Nowadays, we've come so far that if you talk about the Constitution, people look at you with vacant eyes, vacuous eyes, and say, are you a right-wing whack job? Have you not noticed that? That people who talk about the Constitution are looked at like you're a fringe player in our society, and we are a constitutional republic. Oh, my. Bill, Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I think it's pretty simple how to get good, conservative, honest people back in politics.
Yes.
And it's three simple things, okay? The first one is conservative views are correct. They're accurate. And to get people understanding our honest approach about the world, you have to – our kids need to be reading newspapers, you know, not studying arts and all this. They have to.
Well, then you need to have educational choice so people can start – there's competition in the education system when we actually start to educate our children instead of babysitting them in the public school system.
five papers, make them read five papers a day so they understand what's
going on. Okay, no, I understand. We got the general idea. We don't have to get down to the micromanagement of what needs to be done in terms of education. But quite frankly, again, as I say to you, this constant compromising with the lesser of two evils has gotten us nowhere. The country has moved inexorably to the left, 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 left. And in return, we may have stopped it for a while, paused it for a bit, slowed it down a bit, but it keeps moving to the left, 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 left. And in return, we've gotten nothing. Nothing out of it at all. We still have a pathetic education system that in 1981, 82, a nation that risked the report, that situation has only deteriorated further despite... But like anything else, of course, you know, the SAT scores now have been kind of redefined to make them look bigger, with even though in concrete terms... students are actually doing worse, but it makes them look better because it's been inflated. And so, you know, we constantly make these kind of compromises. To what end? To what end, ladies and gentlemen, I ask you? 1-800-449-8255. Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Savage. Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage. It is 8 minutes before the top of the hour. And this, of course, is The Savage Nation, as we talk about the things that are really salient and important. Our lives as Americans, why are we constantly making this compromise with our candidates? Let's go to Ron in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Welcome to The Savage Nation.
Hi, how are you?
It's good, sir. Go ahead.
First of all, we got to understand where we have to go. Now, Burke said that the only two qualifications, whether they're fact or they even are attributed, is that you need wisdom and virtue in your representatives. Forget that noise. We do not have a one-party, two-party system. We have one party, and it's illegal. Why do I say it's illegal? Because they laugh at us. They laugh at the 10th Amendment. They laugh at anything we want. We've wanted our borders secured. They won't...
No. Hold on a second. You and a cadre of people do, but obviously the majority of Americans don't, because we do have the ability to change these things, sir. We do. But the realization has to be there that, hey, it's going to take effort to make a change. Which, by the way, I just want to tell you, you know, Savage has launched this lawsuit against CARE, and that he's got a legal defense fund at michaelsavage.com. And I would encourage you to go and help him finance this, because he is defending free speech. And with the money that's left over, what is he going to be doing? He's going to put a nationalist party together. So you got that? So... you can't lose on this thing. You can help with this to defend free speech. So go to michaelsavage.com, make your donations. There's a link there, donate, and do what you can to help fight this battle against CARE and defend free speech. And then whatever money's left over, he said he's going to start a nationalist party with. All right, Al in Galveston, Galveston, Texas. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Howdy. The Northeastern United States forced McCain on us. We didn't choose him. Believe me, if Texas would have been farther up in the primaries, the race would look much
better. Are you a member of the Republican Party?
We don't we vote by party here. But
no, I'm asking you, are you a member of the Republican Party?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you see, I mean, I don't think that there should be primaries at all in the country. I think that each political party should finance and have their own system of picking their candidate.
Primaries give the people a choice. The caucus.
It's not
really
the people. No. The people get a choice when it comes to the general election, sir. This is about a political party deciding who will represent them, carry their banner. That is really a private matter for the political party to decide how they're going to choose that, what mechanism they're going to use, and above all things, they should be paying for it, sir. All right, next up, Michael, San Jose, California. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
I've contributed to the CARE lawsuit, just so you know. But what drives me nuts is that we get a liberal president who adds all kinds of bureaucracies to the federal government for social programs, you know, et cetera. Then we elect a conservative president, but they don't cut any of the programs or dismantle any of the bureaucracies. The conservative just preserves the status quo. You know.
So what needs to be done?
But they don't take any away then after 4 or 8 years.
I know, but what needs to be done then? What needs to be done is you need to hire people or elect people to represent your point of view that will indeed work towards cutting. I mean, there are members of Congress that do that. There were attempts certainly done by the 94 Republican Congress that came to power to do that. It was stymied, unfortunately, by the Bob Dole-led Republican Senate. But, you know, if enough people want to do it, sir, believe me, it will happen. Politicians, first and foremost, want to maintain their cushy jobs to do that. Work hard on behalf of the American people. You know that. They want to work real hard on behalf of the American people. James in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Good, sir.
I wanted to say a couple things. First of all, I believe that most people are apathetic. They're tired of their politicians lying to them and deceiving them all the time. And second of all, they're also dependent on the government. They don't know it, but they vote down socialist lines. Everybody I know believes, like, we should stop paying money toward NASA, but yet they want to put more into welfare, more into food stamps, more into social programs. And I just think the media lies to them all the time, telling them, you know, they come up with these stories that are just ridiculous stories when they should be telling us things that we need to hear.
Well, first of all, I think the media in this country has an incestuous relationship with the politicians in Washington, D.C. You constantly hear of our million-dollar reporters from the major networks going socially knowing the politicians. And one thing, you know, I learned very early in this business, you can't very well be friends with politicians and then be critical of them. I learned that lesson the hard way when I was up in Canada. A friend of mine, it was very difficult for me to publicly chastise them. And I decided early on I didn't want any political friends. I can't have political friends because I consider myself to be in opposition to the politicians of all political parties. I mean, I'm going to call the Bolshevik on the Republicans as much as I will on the Democrats, because that's my job, is to be critical and to kind of point out when they are slithering and sliding and simply not telling the truth. It is Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Protesting against the Chinese government, because there's been a lot of killings, genocides, everything going on in Tibet, and we just peacefully trying to demonstrate that we need to stop these genocides in Tibet.
All right, that was obviously a protester, and there are protests following the Olympic torch around the world. Presently, it's happening down in San Francisco, and the protesters want us to boycott the Olympics. And I got to ask you this: the architects, the butchers of Beijing. Do you think, honestly, even if every last country in the world ended up boycotting the Olympics, do you think it would change what China does? And I don't think for one minute it would. I can remember Tiananmen Square, and I think I know, Gorbachev was visiting, and there were more and more protesters in Tiananmen Square, and you sit back and you kind of just wait. And I knew exactly what was going to happen. As soon as Gorbachev left, out came the People's Liberation Army to liberate Tiananmen Square with tanks. And so the Chinese aren't about to be moved by outside pressure like this. As a matter of fact, I think they use it very effectively to solidify their political hold on their own countrymen more and more. So I think it's an absolute waste of time to do this. And why? Because what can we really do? I mean, we are in bed with these people. If the Chinese were to say, now look, if you're going to boycott our Olympics, we may just end up boycotting Walmart. And what would happen to millions and millions of Americans who shop at Walmart when they take a look at these empty shelves and no more do we have cheap goods? You know, this whole idea, this relationship with China, I find personally to be quite bizarre. Because on the one hand, you have more and more of American blue-collar jobs in manufacturing disappearing because they literally have been moved lock, stock, and barrel, well, not the workers, but the equipment, over to China. On the other hand, you have another component of the American society, the Pentagon, sitting there planning against the possibility of a war with China as being potentially the biggest enemy that we face in the future. I mean, there's something just so bizarre about that. And so you sit back and you take a look at this relationship where we are sitting there on the one hand and feeding them billions and billions and billions of dollars on this trade deficit. We allow them to artificially peg their yuan or whatever it's called. I think Y-U-A-N is how you spell it. Yuan, yuan, whatever it is, their currency, to the American dollar so that even though our dollar goes down, their currency goes down commensurately, so we never feel any impact at the present time in terms of an increase in the price of the goods that we get from China. And so why is that important? Well, how the heck are you ever going to get rid of this deficit? They got $1 trillion American dollars. And so where else can they go with that? Because of the trade deficit. So where else can you spend an American buck but in America? And so they do stuff like they lend us money to finance our federal government debt through buying our treasury bills. They will come in and they will buy up American companies, or at least attempt to buy up American companies. And that's how it goes, ladies and gentlemen. And no matter what happens, I don't know how we're going to get rid of this trade deficit because, quite frankly, we don't manufacture enough. If everything that was manufactured in this country were sold and none of it was used for domestic consumption, we still have a trade deficit because we import more finished goods than we produce in this country. That's the bottom line. That's what's been happening as we continue to offshore more and more of our value-added jobs. The ability to take some raw materials and to build something with it and add value to it. You know, add some value to that steel by making cars or pots and pans. Add some value to that silicon and build chips. So we do less and less of that kind of stuff. And so therefore, we are at a tremendous disadvantage because we're basically selling ourselves into kind of foreign ownership eventually. And the federal government, I mean, it really comes down to kind of morality and honesty and ethics. And we have become so unethical in terms of the way we report information. I was reading a piece by Paul Craig Roberts. He's an excellent man who's been kind of warning about this offshoring and the ultimate implications for all of this on our lifestyle. And he talks about how the federal government has kind of rejigged the way they count, say, unemployment. And he said, if we were counting our unemployment the way we used to measure unemployment, our current rate of unemployment would be 13% and not 5.1%. And he says, if our current inflation were being counted the way we used to count it before they jigged it, it would be 12% and not 4%. And, of course, they've jigged this to make things look better than what they really are. And, of course, to deny our seniors their full measure of Social Security, quite frankly, because it's cheaper if you've got a lower inflation rate because their payments are pegged to inflation somewhat. And so you have the situation where we've got false information being published by the government. It's been rejigged, which is kind of the way things have been going for the past 20, 30 years. If you can't make a certain standard, what do? You lower the standard and make everybody feel good. It's kind of the way the society's become, which has become morally corrupt. I mean, how can you justify, you know, the big untold story, really, about this Enron situation and the other companies around that time that were nailed for having a jigging, what people consider to be jigging their balance sheet, like having things that they took off, items, debt that was taken off their balance sheet, what do they call it? Off-balance sheet items, was the part that was played by the major CPA firms in this country that sanctioned that kind of stuff. And they were supposed to have had professional ethics as CPAs that should never have allowed that kind of stuff. Because how could small investors looking at, or any investor looking at a balance sheet, think, well, this is all accurately reflects the net worth of a company that I'm investing in, not knowing that there's billions of dollars of debt and liabilities off the balance sheet. I mean, this is just such corruption, or what's happened here with the mortgage crisis. I mean, people getting mortgages without having to prove their income. And then these people taking these mortgages and repackaging them, selling them into the marketplace as an investment, where people are buying them and thinking, well, obviously the people that made these mortgages, these are mortgages, they're backed by real estate, I mean, real property. They would have assumed, rightfully so, that these mortgages would have been properly vetted, but they weren't. And so what happens? You and I and all the taxpayers are going to be paying for this one way or the other. Whether it's the Federal Reserve that prints billions of more dollars to keep the financial system afloat and thereby inducing inflation, which you and I will be paying for, or it's done through taxation, which you and I will be paying for through our taxes. It's going to be a combination of both. And so you have this kind of, well, this totally unethical behavior. And the part is that most people know that. I mean, think about this. You got failed CEOs of public companies who have taken a company and the stock price is half of what it used to be. The company's losing money. They walk away after being an absolute failure with millions and millions of dollars in their pocket. And so we have this unethical, this immoral behavior that permeates the entire American system. And, of course, Savage has talked about this extensively in terms of the crooks on Wall Street. There's something wrong with this. You got no ethical underpinning to the country. There isn't a common understanding of what is ethical and not ethical. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact in the public school system particularly, remember it was situational or ethically neutral? For years and years and years, there was no value system being reinforced in the public school system because, you know, when you are, those of you who are parents will know this, you're there and you're trying to instill a value system, a philosophy in your children. And you do it and you do it and you do it, but you have to count on the society at large to kind of help reinforce that. Because you can't be with your kids all the time, so you expect that the school will reinforce it, that just generally in their actions and interactions with the outside world will reinforce in a broad way the value system. But I think that's just broken down totally in this country. I mean, you've got a bunch of crooks out there, and we're out there, everybody jumping up and down, trying to bail these people out for having been crooks the way they package these mortgages. All right, Steve in Ocala, Florida. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I just called from your earlier point. Maybe it would be good if China withheld its goods from Walmart. I shop at Walmart. Sometimes I don't look at labels. I probably should be looking at labels. And I don't want to compare this Olympics to the 1936 Olympics in Nazi Germany, but I wonder at what point do you decide that maybe we should boycott?
You can't boycott China. China does 50% of the world's manufacturing now, half of it. And I think for us, it's probably got to be about 75%. I mean, it doesn't just matter Walmart. I use Walmart generically because I think wherever you go, it doesn't matter. You can go to the high-end stores as well, and you're seeing stuff made in China.
We're also dependent on Saudi Arabia for our oil, and Saudi Arabia is probably complicit in the 9/11 atrocities. And I'm not saying China is like Nazi Germany, but I'm just saying at what point...
Well, why aren't they? Why aren't they like Nazi Germany?
Are they? To you?
Well, I mean, I think that if you forcibly abort a child that a woman is carrying, I think that that's close to the kinds of stuff that Nazi Germany did. Now, they're not identifying ethnically a group of people and looking to exterminate them. I grant you that. But nevertheless, they do go after, like, the Falun Gong, for instance. They've been unmerciless in the way that they have gone after them.
And also they harvest organs, I think, from prisoners and what have you. So I guess my question is, at what point does morality, you know, you're raising.
But there is no morality tied in with this at all anymore. Our morality seems to have been flushed down the toilet. That's my whole point of my setup here. So I want to hear from all of you at 1-800-449-8255, 1-800-449-TALK, T-A-L-K. Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage. It is my honor and privilege to be on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. It's 24 minutes past the hour. My thanks for you joining me. And, of course, it is my honor and privilege to be here sitting in for Michael Savage. As I've said again and again, it is the only national talk show that talks about issues that are salient and really important in our lives. Now, continuing on with this whole idea of boycotting the Olympics, let's go to Bob in Chicago. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Well, why not boycott Chinese products? Would that not send a signal to the Chinese? And also, why, at the same token, wouldn't that encourage maybe more manufacturing in this country? I mean, look at the trade deficit.
Well, let's see now. I picked up my stapler as you were talking. It's made in China. I'm looking at my remote for my DVR. That one is made in Mexico. I'm looking at my little dictating unit. That is made in China. I'm looking at the cup that I'm drinking from. It is also made in China. Now, so my point being that it is an impossibility for us to boycott China. We're too inextricably linked together as an economy. It is an impossibility. And so when you have people like Hillary Clinton, well, play Cat 21.
I don't believe that that's the right approach to take. What we're trying to do is influence the Chinese government. So it's a government-to-government effort that I am recommending. I believe President Bush should not attend the opening ceremonies. But the Olympics themselves is a much broader movement that goes beyond governments.
All right, stop that, man. So look, I mean, she can say that because she's running. And she's not president. If she were president, she wouldn't be yakking about offending the Chinese and not showing up for the opening of their Olympics. She just wouldn't do it. Why wouldn't she do it? Why wouldn't she do it? Think about it. They have $1 trillion of American dollars, and they are buying and helping to sustain our debt by buying our treasury bills. Let's suppose for a moment we offended them to the point that they said, well, you know, we're not going to continue to buy these treasury bills and help you guys finance your huge lifestyle. And they don't for a while. What would happen? Well, of course, there would be such demand for money between the federal government and private borrowers that the interest rates would go up. The Federal Reserve could end up printing more billions of dollars to make up for this. And that, of course, would cause inflation, which, of course, would hurt us. It would cause tremendous, severe economic disruption to the country. We are no longer... I mean, this is the... I mean, our avarice for these cheap goods that we bought have made it that we are no longer really in control of our own economy and that we are subject to blackmail in the sense of we cannot. I'd love to be a fly on the wall with some of these behind the scenes conversations between our government officials and the Chinese government officials, because we can't do any of these things. Yeah, I mean, all these people can jump up and down about Tibet and run through the streets of San Francisco and other places around the world and in Paris with this Olympic torch and protest, etc. We don't have that kind of control anymore. We have ceded that through our own avarice and through our own mismanagement and by this whole idea we can get something for nothing, and for politicians to have gone along with this insane idea of free trade. Because what we have done, I mean, even environmentalists should sit back and say, hey, what has really happened here? Think about this for a moment. American corporations have taken their pollution and have exported, along with the blue-collar jobs, over to China and other parts, but primarily China, to the point there's so much pollution over there that some of the Olympic athletes are afraid to actually go and compete there for fear that they might damage their health. Think about this for a moment. Think about the heavy cost that we've paid because we've allowed our politicians to go and bribe us and pretend that they can give us something for nothing. It is unbelievable. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Peter Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Thought every once in a while. This one day, the Chinese leadership wakes up and they blink their eyes as if coming out of an enchantment. And they look at each other and they go, oh my God, what have we done?
So the only question, that's Richard Gere, and the only question I would have is, did he think those thoughts before or after he toked up? I mean, come on. You know, this whole thing about this protest movement, what a colossal waste of time. Think about these people. I mean, at the very time when you have this corruption politically, ethically, both on Wall Street and within our political politicians, you have jobs being exported to China, you have this tremendous trade deficit, you have a financial system that's wonky because of this moral corruption. You got DAs or governors that are sleeping with prostitutes and spending some $85,000. All of this stuff is going on. And you have these fools out there, thousands of them, protesting the Chinese and their treatment of the Tibetans. And why do they do it? Because nothing is going to happen. Absolutely nothing. I mean, think about this. Even if every political leader in the world boycotted the Olympics in terms of the opening ceremonies or the Olympics themselves, would it change what the Chinese are doing? No, it wouldn't change what the Chinese are doing. They proved that again and again. And the biggest mistake that we make is we think that people think in terms of the way we think. And these people don't think that way. Their whole society is based a great deal upon social stability. And the vast majority of folks over there look to the heads of that society, in this case, the Communist Party, the Politburo over there, to provide that kind of stability. And this is such a foolish, foolish effort. And so these people are out there protesting. Why? It doesn't have any effect except they themselves feel good. There's no rational purpose for what they're doing. There's no meaning. There's no rational outcome. It will not bring about any change. But in our society, symbolism trumps substance. And these people feel good about what they're doing. Instead of spending some time and cleaning up the corruption in their own political system by getting themselves educated and become aware of what's going on, demanding change, instead they're sucked up in this feeling good and they can follow a star like Richard Gere, who has these delusions about the Chinese waking up. I mean, it's just not going to happen. It's the same nonsense that's being sold to us. As long as we're continuing to eviscerate our blue-collar middle class and export all these manufacturing jobs over to China, and eventually China, because of market-based economy, will end up embracing democracy. I mean, that's an absolute delusion. I mean, they can be mutually exclusive. Capitalism and democracy can be mutually exclusive. They are not tied together at the hip in any way, shape, or form. But that's been a con job that's been sold to us as these jobs are being sacrificed by the millions, as we jettison our middle class. Look, what made this country great is this huge, huge middle class. A huge middle class, a bigger percentage of our population in terms of being a middle class as any other population on the face of the earth, any other society. That's being eviscerated by these idiot politicians who keep telling you that this is good for you. I don't know what is good. As a country, we're living like on a credit card. I don't know how that is good for you. It's like getting one of these subprime loans, mortgages. You can't afford them, you take these adjustable mortgages because you get such a, you know, the bait is such a low initial payment, and you presume that you're going to be able to pay the uptick when it comes 24, 36 months down the road. Well, what happens? You can't do it. You end up losing eventually, and that's what we're doing as a country. John in San Diego, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Peter, well, let me tell you, to hell with Walmart and to hell with China. What we have to do is reestablish our marketing base. We are losing our marketing base. We are not going to be able to even make undershorts anymore. We can't.
We don't make undershorts anymore. We haven't done that for years. What are you talking about?
From Honduras.
You call that domestic? We don't make our undershorts anymore. The textile industry has been all but shut down in this country.
Well, there has to be some kind of accountability for whoever signed this trade agreement with China, because they have sold us out in such a big way that...
You know, look, we can sit here and talk about holding people accountable, and I agree with you. I think it borders on the criminal what's happened, quite frankly. But forget about looking back. You have to look at what can we do now. And as we continue to make these compromises on our candidates, we continue to allow ourselves to be snowed again and again, particularly by the fact that we're going to vote for the lesser of two evils again and again, we aren't going to bring about change. And to pull ourselves back from the abyss is not impossible, but it's going to be difficult, and it will take time. And you start to have to listen to people of conviction who do want to make a change from it. But as long as we are held captive to the lesser of two evils, I don't see how we can bring about this change.
I'm going to vote for myself for president, to tell you the truth. I'm going to write myself in there. To heck with them.
Well, you could also vote for another party, a third party, if you wanted to. Andy in Tucson, Arizona, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The comment I had to make was, you made a comment that the biggest mistake that we make as a culture is evaluating other cultures with our ideals. And I think that's the second biggest mistake. We expect other cultures to deal with us with our values and ideals. And in the 80s, for example, Japan completely took the automotive industry as they did in the 70s with the electronics industry. And when we asked them to play by our rules, their answer was, well, why? Our way is working.
Well, Reagan did impose a quota in terms of the number of cars that they could bring in. So they came over, Nissan and Toyota came over and started building plants in our southern states, as you know. And so that you buy your Japanese vehicles, most of them now have been made here domestically. So there is a difference. The difference this time, what's happened is that these jobs have been exported, and that we are American companies are having their goods manufactured in China and bringing them back into the country for domestic consumption. So that is the difference, and it is a huge difference, and it has made a big difference. So that the Japanese and the Chinese experience are not the same. Although people try to talk about it and say, well, look, I mean, look at the Chinese, the Japanese, they got burned. They bought up all of the Hawaiian real estate, and everybody thought that they would roll up America, Inc. But look what happened to Japan, Inc. Totally different. I mean, our companies have gone over to China and have invested with domestic companies over there, many of them partially owned by the government or wholly owned by the government, gone into partnerships over there. Spent billions of dollars, have exported our jobs, all because they look at us as a static and a very small market compared to the potential of the market over there. And so you have a situation where American companies are not looking at themselves anymore as being American-based. They're international companies, first and foremost. Well, the hell with it. I mean, if they're headquartered here, they should be made to have their allegiance, first and foremost, to this country. And if they don't like that, then they should have their headquarters over in Peking, in Beijing. I almost said the Peking. Yes, Peking duck. All right. Look. How is it possible when we have this huge trade deficit that the American government gives the tanker contract to Airbus? How? A $40 billion contract, which is probably going to be worth ultimately $100 billion, paid for by taxpayers, giving up domestic jobs over to Europe. How is that possible in a sane society, in a rational, sane society? Amy, Norfolk, Virginia, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I want to get back to the Winter or to the Olympics in Beijing, because I was over in Beijing in May of 2002 when they were bidding for the contract. And the things that I saw over in China completely gave me a different light, because I have no idea how in the world Beijing got the Winter, the Summer Olympics. When I was over there, one of the things that I was told was that when the Olympic Committee came over, and this goes to human rights and the whole human humanity, was that the Chinese, the main source of heat is coal. And when I was over there, there was a haze of blackness over the sky. And so what happened was when the Olympic Committee showed up, they forbade the Chinese people to even heat their own homes in the coldest months of the year.
So are you saying that an environmental record which goes into the decision-making of the Olympic Committee?
No, I'm not saying that. But I'm talking about the comfort of their own people. Was they forbade them in the cold months of November, December, January, and February.
And your point being?
Chinese. My point being is that they forbade them so that they could make the sky look pretty and their country look prettier, just so that they could get the bid. That's one aspect of it.
Well, that sounds to me like a democratic government. They're on their road to democracy.
Well,
by God.
Chinese, and I'm a staunch conservative Republican, and that's why I listen to Savage Nation. Okay, because I'm all about smaller government. And
yeah, but you know, conservative and Republican seems to be an oxymoron these days, and I think that Michael Savage has pointed that out to you again and again.
You're absolutely right, but what they also do is they are also trying to erase history. Because I'm going to tell you something right now. One of the things that I went to go visit was Tiananmen Square.
Uh-huh.
And I have a picture of myself, my mother, my six sisters, my one brother. We were at Tiananmen Square, and when we were on the tour bus, they asked us, do you have any questions with regards to the students that were killed at Tiananmen Square, the uprising? Okay, that's great. We answered our questions. We went to Tiananmen Square, but before we got off the bus, our tour guide said, do not talk about it. Do not conglomerate in groups of more than eight, because they still have microphones in Tiananmen Square.
If
you do, the police will break you up.
Yeah.
So and I said, what do they plan on doing in Tiananmen Square during the Olympics? You know what they told me? That my tour guide said that what they wanted, and I am waiting. I have been waiting for this Olympics to happen for 6 years, because they said that they want to bring in tons upon tons of sand and fill Tiananmen Square to make it a California. That's where they're going to hold the volleyball tournament.
Well, I haven't heard that, but we'll have to wait and see. All right, thank you for your call. Steve, Bristol, Virginia. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Steve, go ahead.
Yes, I would just like to make two quick points. Number one, a free market economy in China would be devastating to the American economy. Once you consider if a Chinese worker is making the same wage as an American worker. And number two,
I don't understand. Explain this point. A free market in China would be bad for us?
Correct. Let's suppose a Chinese worker is able to make what an American worker would. All of these cheap Chinese imports would then disappear.
No, the reason it's cheap is because, a couple of reasons. One is, of course, their cost of labor is cheaper, but their currency is pegged to ours. So it doesn't matter how high or how low our currency goes, their pricing into our market is pretty static. And this defeats this whole idea that as your currency goes down, your exports become cheaper, therefore you should have higher exports, and pretty soon the trade balance will balance itself out. Well, that can never happen with China. All right, your next point?
The next point is people say, let's just boycott Chinese goods.
You can't do that.
And if
so, what are your replacement goods if you're going to boycott the Chinese goods?
Because the American regulatory system is such that even from the time you decide to build a factory, you have so many regulatory and environmental hurdles
it will take 3 to 5 years before you even turn the ground on it.
Well, that's a very good point, and I'm going to deal with that just very briefly before we go for a break, which is coming up. But the American Manufacturers Association a few years ago did say that 25% of the cost of manufacturing here was comprised with compliance with regulations, domestic regulations, which is true. All of that stuff is true. That all goes into it. And if you have this kind of an uneven playing field, then it really does behoove the federal government to even up the playing field. All right, I'm going to go for a break, then we'll take more of your calls, 1-800-449-8255. Weisbach, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. Weisbach in for Michael Savage. Thank you for joining us. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Preston in Mississippi. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, my first point is U.S. manufacturing is dead. Between corporate tax and workman's comp in this country, we can't be competitive. That's why everything's being outsourced.
No, hold on a second. I mean, competitive with what?
Competitive with the rest of the world.
Who are we competing with?
The world. We're the second highest corporate tax country in the world.
No. Listen, Preston, please. You know, I don't want to hear this Barbara Streisand stuff, this BS.
And work calm.
Again and again, you've been brainwashed.
Brainwashed.
I mean, everybody else in the world has been trying to penetrate our market, and so it would be up to us to put up a tariff on incoming goods.
To penetrate our market, except for with their goods, they're not trying to set up manufacturing plants over here. The only reason the automakers even put plants over here now is so they can produce more cars over here.
No, they were forced to by the Reagan administration to put up their plants here because the Reagan administration had put a quota on the number of vehicles they could bring into the market. Anyway, look, this is not a question of, although there are costs involved, you're absolutely right. But even if we removed all of those costs, which are about 25% of the cost of manufacturing in this country, we still could not be competitive. And so the question becomes, are we prepared to jettison our economy, our middle-class economy, and our blue-collar workers to the point that we have, or we're prepared to do that? And obviously, the politicians are prepared to do that. Labor representatives in this country who warned about these types of trade agreements are prepared to do that because they continue to support exactly the same political parties that they did in the past that have made these types of free trade agreements possible. And so, you know, nothing changes when you sit here and say, hold the government responsible. But even if you got rid of all those costs, you still couldn't do that in this country because you have built-in costs. The costs of government don't go down, and for a short period of time, we get exceptionally cheap goods in stores such as Walmart. That's true, but after a period of time, the bill becomes due, and it's becoming due now more and more. Because the American dollar is going down, 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 and that's because people are sitting back, the rest of the world, and saying, you know, I don't think we're quite prepared to continue to finance the American binge on credit, living on credit. Jim in Medford, Oregon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Morning, or afternoon, actually. Do you think we should wait until later to take our trade deficit and take it in the shorts, which we are going to, or do you think we should do it now?
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's going to come due. We know it's going to come due, and it's going to come due in a hard term. Should we do it under their terms, or should we do it under ours?
Well, there's no longer any possibility of doing it under our terms because none of the major political players are talking, or at least openly talking, about how to deal with it. They continue to kind of live behind the illusion that we can continue living this way and that we live in a great economy. All of which, of course, is false and an illusion. So, like anything else, I don't think it'll be dealt with until that there is a crisis that forces us to deal with it. Now we're getting closer and closer to that crisis all the time.
You not deny that we should take it in the shorts now, because that's what's going to happen anyway, and to do it under their terms is going to be very...
Well, how do we take it in the shorts? What are you talking about? You can't possibly cut off the manufacturing, the goods that come in from China, because you'd have bare shelves. And I'm not just talking about, you know, luxuries. I'm talking about basics such as staplers. You couldn't find a bloody staple in the country if we cut that off.
There somewhere?
We don't make staples here.
No. Paper clips we do.
Are we still making paper clips?
Sure are.
Well, that's good. That's something that we're still doing. Sir, thank you very much. All right, that's all the time that we have, and I, again, have been honored and privileged to sit in for the man that is the only national talk show host that talks about salient and pertinent points and issues in our society, those that really matter to you and everybody else. This is Weisbach, in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Back in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Thank you for joining me. We're going to have a potpourri of topics. We can probably deal with almost anything that is on your mind this hour at 1-800-449-8255. By the way, if you don't go to Michael's website, you should, and make it a regular stop. Make it your homepage. It's www.michaelsavage.com. And I'll tell you, you know, it's a good compilation of interesting news stories that are important to the country. I like this headline particularly. Give me more white people. We need more white people. Who said that? Who is playing these politics of race? Well, according to the tartan here, it says, only a week after her husband drew throngs to soldiers and sailors, Michelle Obama wooed a small crowd in a gymnasium. Is it Skibo Gymnasium? Skibos or Skybos? Risers were packed with community members and students from many of Pittsburgh's universities. The rally was staffed by volunteers from a number of Carnegie Mellon student organizations, including Carnegie Mellon Students for Barack Obama, Student Senate, AB political speakers, and college Democrats. Helping Students for Obama led the crowd in cheers of, "Ready to go!" was Steve Sovereign, a professional mediator from just outside the Cedar Rapids, outside of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, who got excited enough about the campaign to travel to Pennsylvania and rally for Mrs. Obama. Sovereign, alongside student volunteers, built up a palpable excitement around Mrs. Obama's speech. "I've been here since 11 a.m. setting up, and it's been amazing. It feels like Barack Obama is coming," said the sophomore social and decision sciences major, who is a leader of the Students for Obama. Anyway, where am I getting to this stuff? While the crowd was indeed diverse, some students at the event questioned the practices of Mrs. Obama's event coordinators, who handpicked the crowd sitting behind Mrs. Obama. The tartan's correspondent observed one event coordinator say to another, "Get me more white people! We need more white people!" To an Asian girl sitting in the back row, one coordinator said, "We're moving you, sorry. It's going to look so pretty, though." "I didn't know they would say we need a white person here," said an attendee and a senior psychology major who sat in the crowd behind Mrs. Obama. "I understood they would want a show of diversity, but to pick people up and to reseat them, I didn't know it would be so outright." So outright what? The racism involved in that? Isn't it kind of amazing, though, that really that the whole race card is being played by the Democrats themselves? They're being eaten alive by this issue. I love this ongoing tug of war between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Oh, here's another headline. Jimmy Carter to meet with Hamas leader in Syria. Former President Jimmy Carter is reportedly preparing an unprecedented meeting with the leader of Hamas, an organization that the U.S. government considers one of the leading terrorist threats in the world. When will Jimmy Carter retire? Go away. Why, he's like a bad hangover, isn't he? He just won't go away, this guy. Retired years ago after one term, and he just hangs around. It's like perpetually this guy is a little gnat chattering away in the background. And, of course, Savage lawyers are targeting CARE's paymasters. As you know, Michael Savage is battling CARE in court. And why should you care? Well, you should care, of course, because he's defending free speech. So I would encourage you, as you are at the michaelsavage.com website, that you click on that donate button and donate some money to help with this very worthwhile battle that he's fighting on behalf of all of us. And Clinton's cash in on Dubai. Ooh, the tax returns released by Bill and Hillary Clinton late Friday reveal $15 million earned in a partnership. The Sheikh of Dubai, whose Arab state sparked controversy with the purchase, giving it control of 22 American ports. Oh, I remember that. Do you remember that? I do. All right, anyway, all of that and more is available for you at michaelsavage.com. First up this hour, Matthew in San Diego. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Mr. Weisbach.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yes, I just want to make some comments that I think China is a very misunderstood nation, especially by our culture here in America, and how we're usually kept from the whole truth on a lot of issues that that we face concerning China. For instance, you know, people bring up human rights. You know, the Chinese, they have a different idea of what human rights are, and their idea of human rights is basically self-motivated and self-dictated. For instance, the issues of religion, like the Dalai Lama and Falun and the Christian Church and stuff.
Sir, hold on a second. Are you on drugs?
No.
Are you drinking alcohol or something?
Nope.
Can you try to make a cogent point? Instead of talking these broad generalities, that you say that they have a different understanding of human rights. Aren't they universal?
Well, that depends on your point of view. I mean,
really?
I don't exactly agree with everything that they're about, but I do understand them. I mean,
Well, you haven't said anything. What do you understand that we don't understand, since you haven't told us what they believe? So what, for them, what is their understanding of human rights?
Their understanding of human rights is not to be influenced by other people. For instance, you look at Falun. The reason why Falun came under so much fire by the...
You're talking about Falun Gong?
Say again?
You're talking about Falun Gong?
Yes. The reason why they came under so much fire from the Chinese government is that they were pushing people to do things that normally sane people don't do. For instance, Falun Gong is like a form of meditation and Qigong practice.
So what exactly were Falun Gong forcing their followers to do?
They were enticing their people to test themselves in extreme ways to see if...
Can you, for once in this conversation, give me a concrete?
Yeah. They people in China, as soon as they take up the Falun Gong practice, they change. Their demeanor changes, their attitudes changes, and a lot of people...
From what to what?
...on fire and have set their own children on fire.
Oh, you're crazy. You're out of your... You are out of your mind.
A lot of people...
And if you're not out of your mind, you're some kind of a plant.
Am
and
I?
If you're neither of those two things, you're an absolute idiot. And that may be disparaging to idiots.
Right.
Goodbye. Oh, my goodness. How can you tolerate people like this? They have no point of view. It was a broad generality. What does he mean by the fact, and he won't explain it, they have a different understanding of human rights? Oh, please. Give me a break. Lillian in New York, listening to us on WOR. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, he's got to be kidding. Number one, I wouldn't buy anything from China anyway if he was Chinese or from China. The heck with them. But why, of course.
What are you talking about? You sound as deranged as this other guy.
Well, I'm deranged. I'm not deranged.
Well, what are you trying to say? What are you talking about?
Say, if this the previous caller was Chinese, yes, they do have their culture is separate from ours. We know
Well, of
that.
Course we know that.
On the other hand, I called to talk about Mrs. Obama. Now, she was the one that introduced and brought the guy. What's his name? Obama? What's his first name?
her husband.
Barack Church, Obama.
Barack. Yes, she was the one that brought him to that church. She is the one that if her husband misses becoming president, she's got something on her hands, too.
No, I don't think it was like that at all, quite frankly. From what the reading I've done in the New Republic, there's an article that came to my attention today, which was published in March of 2007, I think, and it talks about how he got to this church. And it's because he was a community activist, and he was going to churches to try to get the support of the various ministers. Ministers would say to him, well, what church are you at? What is your home church? And he didn't have one. And after a number of these apparent encounters with ministers are saying, you know, you're asking us to go out there on your behalf and put ourselves out, yet you don't have a church that you go to yourself. He settled on this particular church. And it was one other thing that was quite interesting in this piece, and I've got to find that if I remember I have that. Anyway, it pointed out that Jeremiah Wright, the very volatile preacher that has made these disparaging remarks about the country, apparently was a Reformed Muslim, according to this. He, I think I've got it here. I'm just going to find it for you, which I found extremely interesting. Well, here it is. It says, Wright was a former Muslim and black nationalist who had studied at Howard in Chicago and Trinity's guiding principles. What the church calls the black value system included a disavowal of the pursuit of middle classness. But anyway, so this said that I found that to be interesting. This was in the New Republic, written by Ryan Lisa, senior editor at the New Republic. And it was published on March 19th, 2007. But I'd never read this before, that Wright was a former Muslim and a black nationalist. All right, back to the phone lines. Norm in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Peter. I lived in the Far East for about 3 years. I was a Peace Corps volunteer just north of Singapore. And during that time, I heard virtually every single tune that we had in the West made into a Chinese song. And I thought, no, these people cannot be paying royalties on everything.
They don't.
Right? I mean, this is symptomatic of this whole deal. Then I read an article written by Pearl S. Buck a few years before that when her book was translated into Chinese, into English, My Several Worlds, the man who translated it, into Chinese from English, put his name on it. He as if he had written the book. And I said to myself, well, these people have a very different idea about copyright laws and patents. They simply don't care. You know,
They don't. I got to tell you, it was incorrect. The caller earlier that I said called him an idiot, but that would be disparaging to idiots, is absolutely wrong. They do have the same degree of rights. As a matter of fact, they have a constitution that when you read through it, if you go to World Constitutions, just go Google World Constitutions, and it has and look up the Chinese Constitution, which I did a while back. They have the same kind of entrenched rights as we do. Only difference is that is a living, breathing document, and it becomes and is interpreted in that manner by the courts, pressured by their own hierarchy, government hierarchy, their leaders over there. So if you want to know where you end up with a living, breathing constitution, like some people in our society say it's a living, breathing document, which is nonsense, you end up where the Chinese are. You've got a constitution, but it means whatever they want it to mean. 1-800-449-8255 is the number to call. Weisbach in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor. San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111, and God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. Homeless alcoholics receive a permanent place to live and drink. New York Times, Seattle. Rodney Little Bear was a homeless drunk who for 15 years ran up the public tab with trips to jail, homeless shelters, emergency rooms. He now has a brand new government finance department where he can drink as much as he wants. You hear this? Isn't this wonderful? It is part of a first-in-the-nation experiment to ease the torment of drug and alcohol addiction while saving taxpayers money. Yeah, it'll save them money. Last year, so-called King County created a list of 200 chronic public inebriates in the Seattle region. They rounded them up, and they gave them permanent homes in a new apartment building. Each had been a street drunk for several years and had failed at least six efforts at sobriety. Yeah? So instead of putting them into a work camp, drying them out and making them pick grapes or work in a slaughterhouse, the 70 men and 5 women drunk bums can now drink in their rooms at public expense. They don't have to promise to drink less. They don't have to attend AA. They don't even have to go to church. No! The liberals have said, here's the booze and here's the room. They woke me up in detox and told me they were going to move me and said, Mr. Little Bear, 37. When I got here, I said, oh boy, this don't look like no treatment center. These are the people who beg, drink, urinate, and vomit in public. But since Seattle loves people who beg, drink, urinate, and vomit in public, they're trying to give them housing now so that in between the hard work of begging, drinking, urinating, and vomiting in public, they can rest up for the next day of begging, drinking, urinating, and vomiting in public. You understand that? Instead of taking these bums and putting them into work camps and making them pick the grapes, work in the slaughterhouse, cleaning the toilets that the illegals do, no, they're going to give them, they gave them already, a government finance department and as much booze as they can drink. Isn't that wonderful? This is so good. This is liberalism at its best. This is what I call liberalism at its best. Isn't America great? The streets are paved with yolds. They gave them apartments. You hear this? Bums. Inebriated bums. Chronic bums that in my day would have been given a good beating with a baton, thrown in the drunk tank, sprayed with a hose and put out on a work gang somewhere. They give them a permanent home. Wait, it gets worse. They drive them to a supermarket.
Savage.
Let me begin with the obvious. The Mad Hatters in the U.S. Congress. 1890, snowfall tied today in Maine. North Dakota breaks a 1926 snow record. The Mad Hatters are meeting in the U.S. Senate to discuss global warming and how to tax us to death. At the same time this country is imploding like Chernobyl, a petty tin pot dictator named Chavez is rising to power in Venezuela. Make no mistake about it, he's in cahoots with the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, who has sent Iranian murderers to train and infiltrate the United States. The ugliest, most frightening man on the planet is Ahmadinejad, and yet he has friends inside the Democrat National Committee who have reported that Iran has not been developing nukes since 2003. This very same Quisling, Mr. Fingar, who put out that false report, in July reported that Iran is developing nukes, and yet the FBI does not arrest him and interrogate him. The Republicans in Congress do not immediately call with outrage for a hearing. So the Senate panel, while we have the greatest snowstorm since 1890 in Maine, passed landmark legislation combating global warming by limiting carbon dioxide emissions. The bill passed by the Mad Hatters in the Senate would set caps on U.S. greenhouse gas emissions from electric, utility, transportation, and manufacturing industries beginning in 2012. It would create an incentive system that would give credits to industries that cut pollution. Industries that failed to reduce emissions would be forced to buy credits from others. The Democrat-led Senate Committee of Mad Hatters voted 11-8, largely along party lines, to send the measure to the full Senate for action next year. The rhetoric was astonishing. Senator Barbara Boxer, one of the most foolish creatures to have ever come out of a womb in Brooklyn, said the following. We are facing a crisis that will hit our children and our grandchildren the hardest if we do not act now. Not to act would be wrong, cowardly, and irresponsible, said Boxer. Senator Boxer is expected to fly by jet to Bali as part of a U.S. congressional delegation next week. Said committee approval of the bill sends a signal to the rest of the world that the United States is serious about reducing global warming. This is on a day when a snowstorm hits Maine, equal the last largest snowfall on record in 1890. Now, I ask you, how can a country survive that has such lunatics in the United States Senate? How is it possible that we can survive? Barbara Boxer, one of the biggest fools ever elected to the U.S. Senate, should be told, Barbara, North Dakota is buried in snow. It's broken a 1926 record for snow. Barbara, Maine has tied an 1890 record before cars were out there. Barbara, wake up. You're a moron. You're an idiot. You're a psycho. All I can do is disseminate the truth. On my website, michaelsavage.com, I've had article after article for the last 2 years showing you one scientist after another who has dared break with the maniacs and have debunked the part of the global warming myth. Even NASA itself has put out a report debunking a major part of the global warming myth, but the media won't report it. You click on my website, you'll see article after article, international scientist after international scientist. I have dozens of articles. Global warming, the cold hard facts. Scientists respond to Gore's warnings of climate catastrophe. Do you know that one of the scientists in the UN who shared part of the Nobel Prize with Gore came out and said this is an outrage, it's a lie? Do you know that the Greenland ice that was pulled up from 1.2 miles below the surface debunks Al Gore's global warming theories? You didn't read any of this. I will tell you, you've got to read this for yourself. You cannot believe this. It's unbelievable to me that even the Weather Channel founder himself has said global warming is the biggest hoax in history. I'm not making this up. It's been printed, but not in the New York Times. It's been published, but not in the LA Times. It's been disseminated, but not on CNN. I'm a single man alone trying to sound the alarm about radical Islam and about radical environmentalism and so many other radical isms that the burden is becoming a little too great for me. And I need your help. I need your help by listening to the show, by supporting me in my legal battles against this front group called CARE. And also, I need your help in supporting the advertisers who have not only stuck with me, but increased the amount of ad time on this show. And now I'll take a few calls before I leave this evening. We will go to Kansas City, Missouri. Jason on KCMO, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, thank you for speaking so strongly and so well for so many of us that don't get heard. I'm calling for your help and guidance. I'm a father of four sons, and I see what's coming. The invasion from the south, Chi-Coms and oil barons buying my country's sovereignty, and the swine in the government on both sides, letting it happen as they get rich from it all. When all this
Yes, I feel as though it's a Bruegel painting, and the pigs are dancing, swilling beer, swilling wine, rolling in fat with money falling out of their pockets. If I were a cartoonist, that's what I would see. Men in striped pants, women in striped dresses, dancing in the Senate with money falling out of their pockets, swilling beer, swilling wine, and stuffing their faces with pork. That's what I would see. It's actually a George Grosz painting, not a Bruegel painting. Jason, I don't have an answer other than to disseminate the truth, because there is a saying from the Bible that says, the truth shall set you free. I don't know whether it will set us free. I see the pigs dancing, my friend, and that's all I see. When I see former senators like Bob Dole going to work for the UAE, when I see that hag, Madeleine Albright, lobbying on behalf of the UAE to turn the port security over to the United Arab Emirates, when I see one senator after another quitting to go to work for the highest price, I too, my friend, am concerned about the future of America. Florida, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, Michael, God bless you for your work. And I'm a retired holistic physician out here in Northeast Florida. I had a radio show downstream of you for a couple of years, but I had to go low profile because I want to tell you I'm voting for you to go to the Asian buffet or the Asian restaurant in Las Vegas, and I'm going to tell you why. You talk about the homosexualization of America, and you talk about – I'm a neurologist and a psychiatrist, retired. why are these people looking at porn? Why are they passing porn? Why are men becoming effeminate in this country?
Because they're not eating enough Italian food.
Well, unfortunately,
they're not eating heavy food. No, I'm joking. Go on with your idea.
They need heavy foods, but they need it to be without all the steroids, without all the pesticides, without all the toxic chemicals.
I hear what you're saying. You're saying that foods that are full of hormones are feminizing men. Isn't that what you're arguing?
Right. Research done at the University of Florida already showed that our poor alligators were being born without you-know-whats because there's so much estrogen-like pesticides in our food supply.
Oh, my. Even alligators were being born like liberals?
Exactly. Exactly. And you and I have so much in common. I've been reading through most of your books. I started out working in the pharmacy, the whole nine yards.
Oh, my God. So you're are you a retired psychiatrist, Jeff?
Retired neurology and psychiatry, but what I really spent my time...
Wait. This is interesting. Where'd you go to medical school?
Pennsylvania State University College of Medicine, Hershey,
Pennsylvania. That was a great, great school. You were a smart kid, right? I mean, you knew what you were doing from the beginning.
I was much smarter than that. I went to Benjamin Franklin School undergraduate, University of Pennsylvania. And you know what I learned, Michael? I learned I needed to listen with respect to everyone and never become an egomaniac and keep an open mind. And while you were traveling around the world collecting plants, I was learning everything I could about Chinese medicine and chiropractic and organic farming and hanging out with those people. And I'm telling you that after World War II, when these German chemical companies took over in combination with all these oil companies, took over our economy, and I want you to know I'm a conservative Republican now. Mm-hmm. But when they took over and started feeding our population all these steroids in the meat and all these xenoestrogens and pesticides, the only reason I'm calling tonight, Michael, is that you're one of the last voices on the radio left from an era when people weren't being poisoned by all these foods. The poor.
That's funny. That's really funny. That's an amazing story. What you're saying is that in the age that I grew up, in the formative years that my brain was being laid down, the foods were not laden with the chemicals. Isn't that what you're saying?
Exactly. An Italian man had to have the courage to say wheat is so full of pesticides now, he had to tell his Italian family to stop eating the pasta and switch over to rice. He wrote a book called Eat Right for Your Type. It has to do with your blood type, your immune system.
Well, but you see, there's a here's where you and I digress a little, Jeff. I come from the holistic medical background in the PhD side from University of California at Berkeley, as you know. The problem is that when you get so rarefied in your dietary needs, I think that's another form of extremism, the rarefication. For example, let me give you an example. A lot of people will only give their dogs bottled water. I think it's ludicrous. You know, you at a certain point, you got to drink a little tap water and give your dog a little tap water. You're not going to die from it in every community in America. And moreover, your body has to get used to it. I was talking yesterday, wasn't I, about the strength of the Ukrainian athletes, particularly the boxers. These guys grew up on virtually poisonous food in the Ukraine, and they're strong as iron. So I'm not so sure that rarefied diets necessarily are the only way to go, Jeff.
You're talking to a Ukrainian Jew with a Ukrainian wife fresh over from Ukraine 5 years ago. The Ukrainian soil is full of...
What, and she hasn't killed you yet?
She tried to kill me 2 years ago, but we're both Jewish Christians, so we decided to give another shot. Now we've got a beautiful baby. Because
wait a minute. So you're 55 and she's 25?
Huh?
She's 25 and you're 55?
I'm 51, she's 30.
Well, I wasn't too far off. I knew it, and you're still breathing?
I'm still breathing. I got three kids.
Well, you must be eating something right, Jeff.
Because I know your family goes back to the Ukraine. That's why you're so smart.
Well, no, they don't. Why, is Minsk in the Ukraine?
It's all the same. It's all volcanic rock, good food, no pesticides.
Hey, let me tell you something. I don't think they're Ukrainians, but, you know, the food that my ancestors ate was pretty poor. They lived on grains. They had very little meat. They were very poor for centuries. Maybe that's what made them smart and strong. You know, one of the food staples of that area for a long period of time was called buckwheat. You know that or not?
Yes.
I love buckwheat. You can't find it. Can you find buckwheat today? You know, you talk about Asian food. One of my favorite Japanese soups is a soup made with buckwheat noodles. For the $24 question, what's the name of that soup?
Miso.
No, not miso soup. You're the expert, you see. There's a noodle made of buckwheat that is served in a certain Japanese soup that's very hard to find. It's soba. Soba is very hard to find in America, properly cooked, but the buckwheat noodle is worth getting. Anyway, Jeff, thank you. I appreciate it. I really do. What a great caller. I'll be right back. Savage. Everybody I know with a brain and a conscience is frustrated, and here is why we are frustrated. We are at war. We are in a third war, but the political media class plays all sides against the middle. They won't say Islamo-fascist. They won't say the Islamo-fascist set off the bombs in Egypt. They won't say Islam is the problem. They won't say it, and we know it. We are being invaded by General Vicente Fox and his millions of soldiers. But Bush won't say, Mr. President, take back your illegals. Instead, Bush gives us another soursop speech about we're a nation of immigrants and we've got to be nice and we've got to be kind. That is why we are all frustrated. We are at war, but the political media class refuses to say Islam is at war with us. We are being invaded by General Vicente Fox and his minions, but Bush won't say, Mr. President, take back your illegals. So we, the people, feel frustrated. We feel frustrated by the lies. We feel frustrated by the liberal media, the liberal government, and the liberal entertainment class. They're all one and the same. They're all part of the same problem. Now, they are not really our enemy. They are our fellow citizens. They're misguided, some of them. They're doing it for craven political reasons. They're not evil people, none of these people. Evil people are those you are about to hear. This protest, so-called, by the Islamic Thinker Society outside the Israeli consulate in New York City over the weekend said, Zionists, you will pay. The wrath of Allah is on its way. The mushroom cloud is on its way. The real Holocaust is on its way. Akbar, Allah, Allah, Akbar, Allah, Akbar. And it says that they're going to spill the blood of Jews. Now, this is in the streets of New York City. There are two things that are wrong with this picture. One, these scum should have been rounded up, found guilty of terrorism that afternoon, and shot, as far as I am concerned. Number two, there is no Jewish leadership in this country, which is the main problem. The Jews are hiding in the Warsaw ghetto of their own mind. The Jews around the world are hiding in the Warsaw ghetto sewers of their own mind. They're afraid to come up and stand up and say, drop dead, you'll die first. Israel has become the Warsaw ghetto of its own kind. Israel, the entire nation, is like a Warsaw ghetto. It has the Warsaw ghetto victim mentality. In a short period of time, they went from a warrior nation to have become a victim nation. The entire nation of Israel stands there being beaten every day, whipped every day. Occasionally, they fire a shot back. Why are they doing this? What happened to Israel? But I concern myself mostly with what the mentality has done to America. We are becoming like a Warsaw ghetto of our own mind here in America. None of us are able to stand up anymore and speak out without being roundly called racist or thisist or thatist. The fact of the matter is this country is being overrun by illegal aliens. The fact of the matter is because of immigration, out of control immigration, Islamic scum of the type you're going to hear not only got into this country and brought their vermin with them, but they threatened to kill all of us here. And the government does nothing. Listen to clip 25.
Father, you shall pay.
Hear the psycho. He's saying the wrath of Allah is on its way, the mushroom cloud is on its way, the real Holocaust is on its way. I say give them a Holocaust before they give us a Holocaust. I say nuke those rat bastards before they nuke us. And I don't know what it's going to take until we get a leader in this country to save us. But that is why the people of this country are both turning off politically, why they're frustrated, why they're angry, and why they're fearful. We have spineless leadership, if you want to call it leadership at all. The political, media, entertainment class playing all sides against the middle. They won't say we're being invaded by Mexico. They won't say we're being overrun by Islamo-fascists. But we the people know we are. We the people know we are being invaded. We the people know what needs to be done. But we don't have General Patton, do we? We have General Patent Leather. We don't have General MacArthur, do we? We have General McKennedy instead. And then, of course, on the political level, we have total sellouts like Schwarzenegger, who has declared upon himself that he's now a scientist. And he's declared by fiat that he knows that global warming is caused by man. Although the science community, is still out on this and debating it vigorously. In fact, the movement within the science community itself is moving away from mankind causing global warming. We are in a slight warming phase, but the general consensus is that it is caused by natural phenomena that we can do nothing about, such as sunspots and whatnot. And yet, this does not stop lying politicians from making it up out of whole cloth. We are at war. Islamofascism is at war, and they're winning. And they're winning, by the way. Despite the tough talk, they're winning. We are a house divided. They're not divided at all. When have you last heard an Islamic of any stripe say one word against suicide bombings or the war on the West, against the West? Name one. Name one. I dare you. I know there are here and there brave Muslims who are speaking out because they understand that this is a catastrophe for them. They're going to lose, by the way. They will lose. We're going to lose. But in the end, they disappear altogether if they keep this up. Because when push comes to shove, the military will conduct a coup in the United States and they'll take care of business. They're going to throw away the liberal class that has ruined this country, the liberal class that has basically conducted a coup upon this nation, the liberal class that has conducted a coup upon the military, the liberal class that has conducted a coup upon the survival of America. And I am telling you, if this keeps up, there's liable to be a military coup in this nation, and the military will eventually save this country. Now, you may say, is he crazy? Is he gone off the rail? I don't care what you think of me, frankly. I'm not trying to sound like somebody from Fox News.
Savage.